All right, turn to 1 Chronicles 12. 1 Chronicles 12, let me get some scriptures here. 1 Chronicles 12, 21, John Duff. Get that, Gabe, Matthew 8, 9. Brian DeBloy, Luke 16, 12. Will, 1 Corinthians 16, 13. And that'll be it. Okay. 1 Chronicles 12, we've been looking. I started a series called The Warrior Chronicles. 1 Chronicles 12 gives a list of warriors and mighty men that helped David become king. And so we're just going through some of these, looking at some of the various men, their tribes, and the attributes. So 1 Chronicles 12, 21 is actually talking about some men from the tribe of Manasseh. And they give us a lesson in courage and leadership. 1 Chronicles 12, 21.
And they helped David against the bands of raiders, for they were all mighty men of valor, and they were captains in the army.
Okay. Let's talk, first of all, about submission and selflessness. There are, sometimes to look at what will make you become a man of God, or we're looking at this as a warrior in the kingdom, you can't understand that until you look at what will stop you and what are the opposites here. So we see two dimensions of pride and selfishness that stop men from doing God's will. The first is some men are unwilling to submit their will to another man. So here is, in the kingdom of God, you find this all through the Bible, is God's will is revealed through a man, through a man of God. You need your own relationship with God. You know that I urge you. You pray for yourself. I don't want to make up your mind for you. You pray. You find the mind of God. You read your Bible. On the other hand, at the same time, is God's will comes through direction from a man of God. And it's not an accident that much of the stories in the Bible are military. Much of the language in the New Testament of the kingdom is military, and so there has to be a structure of authority. There is someone who brings direction, and you have to make up your mind, am I going to follow the direction that comes through men? Obviously, pride keeps men from doing that. And so if our attitude is, who are you to tell me what to do? Or, and I'm beginning a new series in Sunday school this morning on rejection, but often the automatic message that rejection gives when you give any kind of direction is, are you saying I'm stupid? And that's not at all the message, but we hear that. And then you have people that in pride, hey, listen, I know things. I'm experienced. You know how long I've been saved. You know how old I am, et cetera, et cetera. So some men will never become a warrior because they will not submit their will to another man. Then on the other hand, some men are selfish. Here's the other thing that will keep you from doing the will of God. Some men are unwilling to let anyone else win in life. They won't help anyone else win. They want to win. They want to succeed. But they will not in any way try to enable someone else to be blessed. And so some men, this is their attitude. If I get the glory, I'll be involved. We have guys that are in bands that they want to try the nonsense of, I don't play, I don't come. Like, how stupid is that? If that's your attitude, do something else in life. Is you will support other people, even if you don't get the microphone. Then you have guys that if I don't get glory, then I'm not going to help. That's selfishness mixed with pride. Outreaches. You, in when I was a disciple, we had to join together with other Bible study leaders to do outreaches. And so there were guys that they would not help when it was their turn. They want everybody to help. They want their outreach to succeed. But when it was your turn, they wouldn't help you, because what if 1,000 visitors come and it wasn't my outreach? I didn't get the glory. So you have these things. I would love to say that everybody just does everything for Jesus, but that's not true. Pride and selfishness. So you have to understand that to see why the men of Manasseh were powerful warriors here. Verse 21 says they helped David against the band of raiders. So the first thing is they helped David. Why? Because David was in charge. That's the point. This is not every man doing their own thing. David was the one leading. They got in behind him and connected their hearts to the will of God, knowing that the will of God came through a commander. That's David. That's something very important here. Brian, read Matthew 8:9.
All right. Also am a man under authority, having soldiers under me, and I say to this one, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes, and my servant, do this, and he does it.
Okay, so this is a classic scripture about authority, and the centurion, this is a man that he was in charge of 100 soldiers. He says, I have authority because I'm under authority. It's not just me and my 100 telling people what to do. He says, I submit myself to those above me. That's how military structure works. That's how the kingdom works. That's why Jesus is so impressed with that. He didn't say, don't be stupid, that's military, we're Christians. No, he said, that's exactly right, you get it. And that is, so let me just throw this in. One of the things that you have is from time to time, I have people that, you understand, in my position, I have to field complaints. So I get complaints, and some of those are valid pastors that are doing things that are harmful or stupid, and I have to correct that and try to help salvage things. But sometimes I get people to contact, and so what they're actually complaining is that this guy is not perfect. Okay, I'm all for a pastor doing something. So you understand that submission also involves, you have people that are flawed. They do have problems. You don't get a pass because you see a flaw. You don't get to say, well, then I don't have to submit. So warriors connect with the will of God through a man of God. The other thing about helping David against the band of raiders is that they are helping someone else win. Right? This is David's fight. He's in charge. So at the end of the day, David is going to win. That is a crucial part of your development in life as a Christian. But definitely if you want to be a man of God, is you have to help other people succeed. Luke 16:12.
If you have not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own?
Okay, I don't know what translation that is, but if you haven't been faithful in what is another man's or belonging to somebody else, then you can't have their own. This is the attitude. Well, I won't help him on outreach, but I want to succeed. It doesn't work that way. There has to be something in you. How can I help someone? You have to break the curse of envy, the curse of pride. I've told you many times when I was convicted, I have to break the curse of envy in my life. I would speak well of other disciples. I would talk good about them. Man, they did great. Wasn't that tremendous? Great outreach, excellent altar call. I was doing that for myself because that's biblical. If I help somebody else succeed, then God said he will help me succeed. So, submission and selflessness. Second thought, let's talk about courage. All through chapter 12, it lists courage. Of course, it would really help if you're, this is, This wasn't a video game. This was do or die, life and death. So courage would really help. So we're applying it to your life. Repeated throughout chapter 12 is these men had courage. I think we've already mentioned this twice in the first two lessons. So now again, it takes note, what makes a warrior, what makes a man of God? Courage. Why? Because there are many things in life that make us afraid or uncomfortable. Okay, it would be nice if the only things you ever do in life for God are things you are already comfortable with. But that's not true. It would be nice if you never had to do anything scary. But that is absolutely not true. So, think about courage for a moment. Let's begin. You know, there are men that are afraid to face themselves. Sometimes that's the scariest thing of all. I know guys, they'll wade into a bar fight, you know, take on Hell's Angels, but they will never look within at themselves. That scares them. There are men that never ask for help. It frustrates me when people are in absolute crisis to the point of losing their salvation, losing their marriage, everything. It's like, why? You have never, ever one time told me this. You've never asked for help. But now we're in a crisis and you've never asked for help. That's why? And some men will never face themselves. They will pretend rather than ever have the courage to say, there are some things that are not okay in me. They will never reveal weakness. They will never reveal problems. That's one element of fear. It takes courage to face yourself. Then you have men that are afraid of doing anything that has an uncertain outcome. Right? What if I witness to somebody and they reject me? That's uncertain, right? Not every person says, thank you for sharing the gospel, telling me I'm a sinner going to hell. What if I pray for someone and they don't get healed? Or what if I go out and I don't succeed? So, but those are all possibilities. That's true. And I've seen men. We first began to pray for the sick in our fellowship. We had leaders in our fellowship. They had influence and were well respected. They hated. They would fight praying for the sick or the supernatural. And part of the reason why was it just totally vexed them, the idea that they weren't in control. That idea, you could pray for someone and they might not get healed. So, nah, no, no, no. That's from hell. I'm never doing that. No matter how, I'm going to fight anybody else doing it. That's a twisted thing. So, life has uncertain outcomes. I cannot guarantee every person you witness to, every person you pray for, every time you try a venture for God, it'll succeed. It might not. That's not why we do it. We do it because God tells us to. Third is there are some men that are afraid to take responsibility in their own home. Fight demons on the outside, absolutely. Make a stand with people, no problem. Take responsibility in their home for their kids? No. Stand up to their wife? No chance. That takes courage. So, sometimes that is marriage problems that men, you know, how long have you been married? Why do you want to live like this? Why do you want to live miserable? I don't get that. I don't care how much money you have. I don't care how much success you have. If your home is miserable, you're miserable, right? So why would you not? And part of the reason why is because I may be the problem. Right? It's that pride thing, isn't it? So they will not take responsibility. Working to meet the wife's needs, and this is a powerful principle in the Bible. We have in our fellowship, we We have a biblical guideline that we follow. The Bible says a husband of one wife. If you think about it, it's a little unfair. It doesn't say wife of one husband. It says husband of one wife. If you are a Christian and you divorce, then you can't pastor. Is that what? Why? Because God puts responsibility. It is, and so what often happens is there are guys, they have marriage problems, and they say, but she's a witch. Come on, you can't expect me to have a good, she's, look at her broom, it's in the corner, come on. And they think somehow, but no, God says, you are the key. There's something in you. You have the power to meet your wife's needs, and part of what you are saying, she's a witch, you have something to do with that. And in some ways, and God has to do a miracle, but you have something to do there. No, I won't do that. That's not fair. Or making a stand. There are wives at times, they want unhealthy things and carnality, or they want unhealthy friends or appetites that are not right. And sometimes as a man, we're not going to do that. No, I do not want you to have relationship with them. That takes courage, right? For various reasons. Because of silence, she'll make you pay. She'll beat you up. Whatever might be the possibility. So, in our text it says, these men were men of courage. Verse 21, they were all mighty men of valor. So, no matter what it is in life, they face their fears. That's courage. Don't tell me how you used to fight before you were saved. Facing your fears now. Facing your problems. Facing your enemies. Here it says the raiders. Not the football team, but these were marauders that would come in and attack. So, part of this is in life. You have to have courage against surprise attacks. You ever had that? Just like life changes on a dime, man. One phone call, you wake up, yesterday life was heaven, today is hell. Wait a minute, it's a surprise. You have to have courage against setbacks. There are times, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but men, sometimes in life you're going to lose. You are not going to win every time. If you won every time, your head would not fit in the state of Texas. So, God helps us. He doesn't let us win every single time. Sometimes you're going to have setback. It takes courage after a loss to get up. You have to have courage against failure. What it's referring to, helping David at Ziklag. Ziklag was the city that they shouldn't have been in. They were at risk because of David's failure. David gave in to fear. Saul's going to kill me. I'm going to live with my enemies, the Philistines, and they're in Ziklag. They shouldn't have been there in the first place. And so the enemies come and conquer the city, kidnap their wives and children, take all their money. That's David's failure. But David said, I'm going to get back on track. And these men said, yes, we're going to get back on track. You got to have that. So courage is not the absence of fear. If you're praying, God, take away fear, take away fear, take away fear, take away fear. Okay, you can pray that, but don't confuse this that you will wake up one day and say, nothing terrifies me. I am absolutely confident that day will not come. I've been honest with you. I've spent my whole life doing things that terrify me. You know, starting being in a band, you know, first as a new convert, witnessing, street preaching, leading a Bible study, preaching in a concert, pioneering, going overseas, taking churches, assuming leadership, just on and on and on and on. You just move from one thing to another. Courage is not the absence of fear, it's the willing to face your fear. So these men, they were men of valor. They're like, yeah. There probably were some knocking knees, fluttery stomachs in those men. But they said, but we're going anyway. That's what it takes. 1 Corinthians 16:13.
Watch, stand fast in the faith, quit you like men, be strong.
Quit you like men should be translated act like men. I like that. Act like a man. See, manhood is not, you know, macho. I got bigger muscles than you, or I could beat up more bikers than you. Act like men. That's I'm terrified. So what? I'm not comfortable doing this. So what? It's uncertain. So what? Act like a man. Face your fears. It has to be done. That's courage. Final thought is leadership. Life requires leadership. We started with you have to submit to leadership, but then the Bible says that they were captains in the host. So they became leaders. Life requires leadership. Without leadership, it's chaos. If you don't have leadership, there's chaos. Someone has to provide direction. That's just the way it is. If there is no, you know, it would be a wonderful idea. Democrats would love the idea. No one's in charge. That's a lie. Someone has to be in charge in every institution in the world. Every business, every church, every home needs a leader. Has to be. And this is true. Without leadership, probably nothing gets done. It devolves into stalemates. Nothing gets done because everybody's opinion is equal, right? The whole idea of having serious men, I didn't start serious men, is Jonathan and Corey and some different ones before my time had the idea we want to do more for God. Excellent. We're going to get together, we're going to read a book and discuss it, but the problem is it becomes simply arguments about whether that was really Samuel that came up from the grave, right? And your opinion is as good as mine. But that changed when I came, said, no, I'm going to lead this. It requires chaos, where you have someone who will not lead. And often this is someone who is not comfortable. Leadership is responsibility. There are men, they don't want responsibility. So where a man will not take responsibility, you have chaos in the home, in the church. Where there is no leadership, people fail to rise. So the point of having leadership isn't so one guy can have his ego stroke. The whole point is a leader enables other people to rise. My greatest joy as a pastor, I love preaching, but my greatest joy is helping men to reach their potential. But that only comes by leadership. And then, of course, if there is no leadership, as a pastor, I have to make hard decisions. There are people on a regular basis, they're not happy with me because I have to make hard decisions. That person is a rebel. They're going to hurt us. You can't come. You can't pastor. You're a threat to women. You're not going to come to church. That's life. It just has to be. If you don't have leadership, predators rule in all of life. So the problem is that men view leadership simply as a title or a position. Right? They think if we have a badge. Can I have, you know, the title of this, or if I can quote a scripture, I'm a leader. Honey, the Bible says, wives, submit yourself to your husbands. And my old saying, if you have to tell somebody you're in charge, you're not. Right? So leadership is not simply a title or a position. Because the real truth is you can have a position and not be leading. Right? The Bible is filled with this. Saul. David comes on the scene. They're supposed to be fighting the Philistines. No one's fighting. Goliath is ready to say, someone come fight me. That was Saul's job. But he's not leading. So people are in trouble. And then if the one who is supposed to lead does not, nature hates a vacuum. You understand? That's science. If you paid attention in school when you weren't chasing girls, causing trouble. That's a law of science. Nature abhors or hates a vacuum. You can't have nothing. So when someone doesn't lead, someone else will step in. If the man doesn't lead, the wife will have to. or the kid's will, which is even worse. In a church, if a man doesn't lead, then strong egotism. Well, what happens if in the vacuum, the people who do rise to leadership, what if they're not good? What if they don't have good hearts? What if they don't care about people? So, our text says these men were leading. Verse 21, they were captains in the host. So, that means a number of things. Gentlemen, you have to be a man worth following. So, I want to be a leader. Well, you better make sure that you are worth following. Because the scary part of leadership is in some way people will become like you. Right? If we had a whole church full of you, would that be good or bad? Would anybody pray? Anybody witness? Would anybody have character, right? So, character on the inside. That's the crucial thing. You have to be a man worth following. One of the most scary, I don't know if even that is a strong enough word, but one of the most frightening statements I have ever heard in my life. The church I was sent out from at one time did not have good leadership, had terrible leadership. After we were gone, Lisa and I were already out, and we were watching the chaos that ensued when bad leadership was involved. And so one of the most terrible things I heard my wife my wife heard another lady, one of friends of ours in the church, is she went back to see her friend in the nursery, and someone asked this lady, friend of ours, what did the pastor preach? How was the preaching? And she said, it was a great sermon. What a pity it came from him. What she was talking about, she knew everything he was preaching was the opposite of what he was. He had actually borrowed somebody else's sermon. That's the real truth. But think about that. This was known. He's nothing like that. He had the title. He was the pastor. But the problem was he wasn't worth following. People knew that. Number two, you have to act like a leader. We're looking at 1 Chronicles 12. It's an action chapter. It tells us what men did. Not what they thought, not the position, title they had. What did they do? So, in the absence of leadership, David, I will fight the Goliath. Jonathan, I'm going to go fight the Philistines. They did what leaders should do, and then God blessed them. They won victories. You have to act like a leader in all some of the ways that we've already talked about. And thirdly is if you're going to be a leader, you have to care. This is a crucial, crucial part. There are men that they crave leadership in many different ways. Partly, we're going to talk about this in succeeding weeks in my series on rejection. They think that a position, a title, will fix what's broken inside. That's absolutely untrue. So, to be a leader, you have to care. Good leaders are ones who care about the ones who are following them. Saul, you read the story of his life, he cared only about himself. So therefore, he was not a good leader. Think about some of the incredible statements in the Bible. Moses, God tells him, you know what, these people have ticked me off so bad, I'm going to kill them all, I'm going to start over again with you. And Moses said, let me be cursed instead of the people. That's incredible. These were people talking bad about him. And he said, God, have mercy on these people. I care about them. Paul, what comes through in all of his epistles is his love for people, his love for churches. He cares about. That is something you cannot. I don't care what title you have. If you don't care, you are not going to be a good leader. Okay, that's all we have for the lesson. Now, maybe there are questions you want to ask. Something you want to know. Kenny.
So in order to become a leader, you get like, become like you, you have to be connected to a man of God all the time, right? Like, you can't get wisdom or certain direction unless you're connected.
Well, you can get your own wisdom and direction, but not independently. If you are connected to a man of God, you will receive direction, and then you are able also to pray, and God will show you your own. So it's not like a man of God is the only source of wisdom in the world. I don't have a brain, I only have a leader. He's my brain for me. That's incorrect. But what happens is as I say, I encourage you, you study for yourself, pray for yourself, seek the will of God for yourself. But if there's a heart of submission, God speaks to you. He's willing to. When there's not a heart of submission, then God can't. He says, no, I won't honor that. So you limit your ability to grow and learn. Yeah?
How do you act like a leader without actually letting your pride or your flesh take control and acting in charge around people and taking it to another level of acting like a leader? Maybe some ways you could practice that, you know?
Well, leadership is service. That's first of all. It's not an accident that on the day that David came to fight Goliath, he was delivering cheese. Right? He's a food delivery boy. So acting like a leader, you know, in some way is not a, you know, it's not a look on your face or a way that you walk. Some of the things that we said practically is, how can I help someone else? How can I be a blessing in that? That's where leadership comes from. Pride is something that is universal. There's no, you know, I can tell you, don't be proud. It won't help. We all will be proud, and life will kick our butts, or we'll have to be corrected in that. So, you know, on the one hand, I can say we take deliberate actions. Like if you are speaking well of other people instead of bragging, you're actually, I did that. That was medicine for my own pride in some ways. To help other people look good, that helped my pride. But on the other hand, you'll be filled with pride and you get your butt kicked and then you learn from that. I had a conversation during conference had a guy that started to prophesy every service. I had been in another conference. He prophesied every service. And so I told his pastor, I said, look, this guy don't have that much to say. That's just pride. And so he came to apologize. And I said, I accept your apology. And I said, look, the reason why I'm telling you that is because I've been there. I have been filled with pride and had to get my butt kicked. That's the growth process. God will help you. God has like really big pins to poke the balloon of our ego. So, but take actions against pride. Yep.
So knowing like you're building a church, a lot of times you're caring for people and almost maybe befriending them. But how do you separate being a leader and a friend? Because, you know, I know like in my business, guys that work for me, if I get too friendly with them, I've noticed it affects my ability to lead them too. You know what I mean?
Yep.
How do you separate that?
Yeah, it's a natural process, and of course, in pioneering, when you first begin, people haven't really made up their mind about Jesus. So, you of course it is family, friendship, relationship in many ways. In the natural process of time, there comes where that's something they have to shift in their heart, mm-hmm. that they accept you as a leader. So. So in some ways, in a church, it becomes a natural process. In business or a church, the only thing I can say in answer to your question is that there are times that people cross lines, right? Is, hey, because we're friends, so therefore I'm going to show up late all the time. Right. So at that point, it's like, no, I'm not going to treat you differently. I like you. We're friends, we have meals together, we crack jokes, but I'm not treating you different. I get on him, so I'm going to get on you. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it is, so that you draw lines in some ways. So you, it doesn't mean that you have to stop being friendly. It right. means that you draw, these are the boundaries.
Right.
I will. I'll be friendly. You can be my friend, but I'm the boss. You will do what I say. Okay? And so there are times when, you know, as a pastor, so in from you're describing pioneering, which is a natural process. I think in pioneering, the first church I pastored, I was there 18 months. I don't know if anybody ever called me pastor. It didn't matter. I'm functioning. I don't care about a title. Mm-hmm. I'm not hung up on whether people call me pastor. So I didn't sweat that. But then there comes in times that they have to make choices in life for themselves. But that is lines of authority. This don't do that. And don't cross that line. Don't abuse. You know, if you think about it, I had to make a choice. My father was my pastor. Mm-hmm. So I had to make a choice that I view him. He is my father, but I treat him as my pastor as well.
Right.
That's why with other people, I called him Pastor Mitchell. I didn't call him Pastor Mitchell. He's my dad. Right? Mm-hmm. But for other people, I made that shift in my brain. I have pastored family. They have to. I have a family relationship, but I'm your pastor. So you know, at different times, you have to draw a line. This is the way it's going to be.
Can you recommend any good books on leadership? Do you know of any that would be helpful?
I have tons of leadership books. I have to see which ones I think are the most helpful. Yeah. I will. You'll remind me.
Okay.
And send me a text so I don't forget.
Okay. John's question, but you talked about servanthood as a leader.
Uh-huh.
So when you're leading or you're pioneering or whatever your role is in the church, how do you balance that, having the aspect that I'm a leader, but you're still trying to serve people without having that, like, do what I say mentality? How do you maintain that?
Well, first of all, you can't demand service from people you don't serve, right? You can't demand it. So as I say, I just told you a key. I pioneered probably for 18 months. I don't know if anybody ever called me pastor, right? So I wasn't sweating that. I'm working for their good. How can I help you? How can I counsel you? How can I inspire you in that? So it is service, but this is true in every level. When I came here, almost 17 years ago, it's kind of a, being an assistant is kind of a funny role in some way. So there are people that are like, okay, Pastor Mitchell, we respect. I came from pioneering, building churches up. I led a conference and I come and it's like, oh, you're the assistant. And so I had people that never talked to me. Probably there are people that still haven't said two words to me. If I don't say hello to them as they go by, they've never said boo to me. There are people that treat it. But then, I think of a couple that that's the way they were like, and I don't think the wife ever even, I don't know that she ever even said hello to me. But then there's a crisis and their child's in the hospital. And I drove down to Phoenix and pray for their, that changed everything. Now I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread because I serve them, right? You can't demand it. And so that one thing is you have to have your ego in check. Part of pastoring is you have people that disrespect you on different levels. I don't sweat that. Right? I'm not hung up on that. Now, there are people that are disruptive. That's different. I'll take action against that. Or if you, as a disciple, are rejecting my direction, that's different, you know. So, but the main thing is that you don't make it about your ego. Is that if you, I don't view pastoring as ego affirmation. I want you all to say certain words or treat me in a certain way. So that's what I mean by service. But then there are times when you, this is the way it's going to be. I don't think, you know, hey, I'm not asking whether you understand it. There's a time for that. But I can't do that if I haven't served them first.
So I'm guessing those are the important things that you really kind of say, this is the way it's
going to be. Of course.
But if it's kind of just
Well, yeah, sure. Anybody can make a suggestion. That doesn't mean I have to take it. But neither do I. Shut up. Don't you dare tell me what to do. Okay, I'll think about that. I've asked people to have some great suggestions. No problem. There are other people that are just trying to manipulate, get their own way. So, and sometimes I can smile and go, uh-huh, all right, well, I'll think about that. And I thought about it. I'm done. You know. And then there are some that say, no, we're not going to do that. So that's why you need wisdom. There isn't one way to treat everything. Life is so varied. People are so varied and complex. I can't give you one way to speak to every person.
I think I know the difference, but can you explain the difference between someone being disrespectful and someone being disruptive?
Okay, yeah. Let me give you an example. We get, I have people that come by at the door and they tell me, they say things to me that are actually insulting or rude. Don't matter to me. I don't care. Right. They've expressed an opinion to me. Number one, I gauge them. They don't really have influence. It's not like they're standing, they're not, you know, starting a website, IHatePastorGreg.com, right? And, you know, and so they're disrespectful or, you know, they don't really, treat my opinion as much. So that doesn't matter. Disruptive is now they're influencing other people to make bad decisions. Or they're, you know, there's, you can have any opinion you want. You start spreading it around an attack against a pastor in a church, you and I are going to talk about this. Yeah. Because that influences weak people. Mm-hmm. Right? So there are some people that, oh yeah, you know, whatever, they have an opinion. But then you get someone who is struggling in their salvation. Yeah, I think the pastor's a jerk. He doesn't know what he's talking about. That's destructive to that person. Mm-hmm. I can't allow that. You're right. Not going to do that. Mm-hmm. So to me, no problem. You have an opinion, you're insulting, I'm not your cup of tea, no sweat. You don't have to. I don't respond to every slight insult.
Right.
Which can be made. That's the difference.
As I thought. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to ask that, but I have another question. I've heard you speak before, and Pastor Jesse's talked often about confidence in leadership. Have you always been confident in, I know there's, you guys are talking about four identity issues, but then when it comes to public speaking or teaching or doing different things in a leadership position, have you always been able to do that with confidence, or is that something you develop, or how did that work?
I have always been able to speak publicly. Yeah, I've told you, I still have my third grade report card, and on it says, Greg is a very bright boy. He often reads reports from pieces of paper on which nothing is written. So I do a book report. I read it. It's like, yeah, I couldn't be bothered writing it down. So I'd stand up with a blank piece of paper and I'd read a whole report. Right? So I never had a problem speaking publicly in that way. Now, that doesn't mean I was never nervous, but I had the ability to... You fake it. There's an element. You're not being a hypocrite if you fake confidence. That's not hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is I'm a devil and I act like a great Christian. You see the difference? So it doesn't matter. My knees are, but I stand up. I'm going to pretend. I do this. That's why people talk about, wow, you know, watching your live stream is like you're, you know, even if there's nobody there. So, but those are just people skills, right? When I'm preaching, I'm not actually looking in everybody's eye. It looks like I am. I'm not. I'm actually looking slightly above your head. I don't look in anybody's eye. It'd be depressing. Right? Come on. If I'm preaching, you know Noel's asleep. So, right? You know, there are guys that are asleep. There are people texting. There are people picking their nose. So, but I just fake it. That's a... You project confidence no matter how I feel. That's the point. There are times I'm terrified. Who cares? I will act confident. Right? I go, oh, Pastor, no, that's what I say. You will put on your game face. What do? I'm taking over this church. I'm scared. Put on your game face. You get in there. You look people in the eye. You act. How would you act if you were confident? That's how you should act. right? So that, and then, but it becomes a part of you. Then you, you know, I don't fake it every time, right? I'm genuinely confident. I didn't come here today like, oh my God, look at all those guys, look at me. Right, so you get good at it to where you genuinely have confidence, but then you move into a new level. And it's like, oh my God, you know, preaching a conference for the first time, right? You know, whatever it might be. So you, all right, then I'm gonna act confident until I become confident.
So what about if you are, if you do have confidence, making sure you don't come off the wrong way to people? Is that just
growing? Yeah, well, number one, if you have a good wife, my wife, my wife said to me, you know, many years ago, she said, sometimes when you're talking or when you're preaching, you sound arrogant, right? And so there is so I was confident, but what it is the way you're speaking, you can make other people feel stupid. We call that condescending. Right? So it's like, yeah, that's right. That's not good. I don't want to. And it really helped me. I saw somebody else. It's like, I couldn't quite get it. And then I saw somebody else preaching. And it's like, that's how I look. I don't want to be like that. And so you take direction. A good woman will help you. I know we hate this as men, but a lot of wisdom in your life comes through your wife if you listen to her. So we hate it because she's our wife or because she's a woman, but it's really true. And then other people will, of course, yeah. David?
So you're talking about serving as being leadership, and John was talking to you, you mentioned drawing lines with certain things and people that things and stuff like that. How do you apply that to your home? I have 5 kids, and if I was trying to serve by doing everything, there's a lot of laundry.
If there's a what?
A lot of laundry and a lot of bathroom cleaning to do and stuff like that.
Yeah, but that's roles, though. Okay. So you understand there are different roles. I don't if I assumed cooking in my home, we'd starve to death. Right? It's just ain't nobody would eat, or we would have meat only for the rest of our lives. So it's just meat and top ramen. I'm good at that. So you're talking about roles. There are roles. I do different things than my wife does. But then how can I serve her? That's number one. There are times when she is overwhelmed. I can help you with something. You're stressed out. You had a hard day. I can wipe a dish. It won't kill me. I don't want to. That's not my thing, but sure, I can do that to help you out. Or in finding ways to, but don't confuse servant, being a servant with you then have to be the housekeeper. So I'm not against it. Sometimes, and I'll just throw this in for all the married men here, is that when they ask wives what puts them in the mood for sex, helping out at home is actually top of the list. So anyway, I'll throw that in. Free all the single guys, close your ears right there. But anyway, so I don't take my wife's role. It's how can I find other ways to help? Get you going, Zach.
So kind of along that same line, I had a thought. I know something Pastor Jesse has, and you talked about a lot is service in leadership. So how do you serve when your church gets to a point where obviously pastors, all of you guys, you're so busy doing a lot of other things, you don't have time to do all of, you know, this regular service thing, setting up chairs, setting up tables, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So how do you still serve and, you know, show your church that you're serving, even though you don't have time to do maybe a lot of the things that you'd like to be able to do?
Well, I have other service roles. I mean, service is not just setting up chairs. They're, you know, I am serving people by feeding them, you know, by counseling them, by looking out for their best interest. So there are many ways to serve. You don't get to the point where you, I do not lift chairs. I don't do windows, I don't lift chairs. And so I'm not against it. What was that when I was being interviewed by Harold Warner in Tucson? So it's in his house, right? And so they got all this video and sound equipment. So when we finished, they got to take it down so we can have lunch. And so I'm helping the guy carry the equipment to the car. And he's like, wow, the leader of the fellowship is carrying equipment. It's like, that doesn't make me heroic. It's just like, I wanted to eat. No. So, yeah, I'm not against it. The on the flip side is you get pastors that they're control freaks, right? Is I have to do everything because no one can do it as good as me. That's, you know, I predict that I probably could pull a better altar call than any of concert preachers, right? I'm thinking maybe I've got a little bit of experience, but then you wouldn't grow. So being a control freak, I have to do everything. My job as a pastor, discipleship, is to reproduce myself. What would Pastor Greg do if he was here? Right? There are things that I don't do. I'm not involved in every little thing anymore. But the idea is to train men so that they do what I would do. That gives me confidence. I love my staff at the moment because I am confident that they are doing what I would do. They tell me, and I was counseling, and I said, that's exactly what I would have said. Yes. That's great. Very good, Stephen. Very good, Jesse. Very good, right? So that's what you want, and that enables greater service. Somebody else, you have another question?
How do you, obviously as a pastor, you're serving people, but how do you separate, serving people without, them taking advantage of that? You know, because sometimes you, serve people, but then it's just like, and they want stuff, it's just like, it gets to a point where they're, taking advantage of you, you know?
You know, then I don't, what's the psychological term, enabling? I'm not an enabler. So people that are users, I stop helping them. That was in South Africa. Let me give you an example. South Africa, when I went, the official unemployment rate was 37%. And there would be, depending on your age, it could be in the 70% or so. Incredible poverty everywhere. Everybody needed money. So how do you separate? And to me, at one time, their money was 14 to 1. So they had a need. I could easily... It wouldn't even hurt me, right? Yeah. So I had to develop. There are some people, this is not helping you. You are a user in life. You're now viewing. And part of that was, how easily do they ask? Oh, Pastor, I got a need. What do you need? And they would name a sum that for them was outrageous. It still wasn't huge for me, but I need 10,000 rand. Be like, what? Whoa, and you just said that so easily. No, I can't help you. Even if I, because I wouldn't be, it wouldn't be in their best interest. So people are users. You get guys here, some of you have worked with converts, and we have warned you, those people are mooches. Stop giving them stuff. Stop helping them. That is not a good spirit. You're not helping them by giving them money, giving them stuff. You're actually hurting them. So you got to have that ability. That's not that we can't. It's not that we don't care. It's that it's not good for you. They'll use you. They'll suck you dry in life. That's what you got to learn.
Pastor, in that, just thinking about high maintenance, low impact people, they might not be taking your money, but some people can take your time.
Sure.
But is that just a discernment thing over time?
Yeah. You got to pray for that. The devil sends people to suck up all your time. And there are guys that they do this. It is a conversation I have, very often through the years is you are giving everybody a ride. I had a conversation with a guy. How many seats are in your car? Okay. How many people are in your family? Let's do the math. You're done. Your church cannot grow. That's just not going to work. Right, so you gotta learn that there are people that they want to talk to me every service, right? I know saying that everybody with a good heart, I will never talk to them at service. I don't want to bug you. No, but you get people. They're just they want to call me every day. They want to talk to me every. No, that's not necessary. You want me to run your life for you. I have no interest in running your life. That's different.
Do you ever literally draw the line and say, look, this has to stop, or?
Sometimes. But the main thing is what you get is you get people that they're trying to get an emotional fix. They're not really wanting help. What they want is I'm their drug. So it's an emotional fix. Pastor, what do you think? I got anything? You don't really want anything. You just want a fix. I'm not a drug. I'm not meth. Okay? So you there are people. So if they want an emotional fix, so you learn ways. So I start being short with them. Uh-huh. Okay, there you go. There are signals you give people. All right, you put your arm on their elbow and you're gently pushing. Right? Those are people that have sensitivities, like, okay, this is over. Wow, he didn't make me feel warm and fuzzy. I wasn't trying to. Right now, there are other people. I'll give you all the time in the world. I will sit with you. I'll cry with you. No problem, because that's not, you're not a mooch and you're not a high maintenance. That's not what you're wanting. It's where you're at. And so you've got to have that sensitivity. And that part of that is in pioneering, that becomes crucial. Is it sounds mean, you know, I've given guys the, you know, the old song, you've got to be cruel to be kind. That's the way it is sometimes. Nope, that person, I don't think I even want them in church. But everybody needs Jesus. Yeah, but that person is here to suck me dry. Nah, that's not going to work. Or this person, I'm going to be short with them. And then some people, listen, you don't have to do that. Don't stop, okay? And you get people that it's like a manipulation thing. Remember the story I told you about the call I got? Pastor, you got to come right now. Rodney, he has a demon. It's 3 a.m. I was like, no. Rodney's 34 years old. He spent 34 years getting this demon. He can wait till tomorrow. Yes. Tell him I'll talk to him tomorrow night. I don't have to. That's manipulation. All you're going to do is make me tired for the whole day. You know, so that's wisdom that helps you to survive and you help people. Good. Good questions.